Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Phil Dierking, Pete Musto, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
When Beta Brand recognized that knitwear was becoming a popular look in running shoes, the company asked users of its website what kinds of footwear they liked. Using their answers, the clothing manufacturer had its version of the shoe available on the website in just 1 week. What the users saw was a three-dimensional, or 3D, picture of the running shoe. The image had height, width, and depth. Yet, no such footwear existed yet. Normally, it would take 6 to 9 months to create a traditional prototype or model of the shoe. By waiting so long, the company might have missed out on the interest in the knitwear. The web attention span is short, noted Chris Lindland, Chief Executive Officer, or CEO, of Beta Brand. So, if you can develop and create in a short time, you can be a real product development machine. Buyers still needed to wait a few months for the real shoe to be manufactured. Yet, the use of digital technology in designing and selling means new fashion products are getting to people faster than under the old system. Companies and store owners who welcome this technology are going to be the winners of the future, said David Basick, Managing Director of Alex Partners, a marketing advisory service. The use of 3D imaging is a big cultural change for clothing makers. For years, designers created images on paper, a design got approved, and then images went to a factory that created prototypes. Designers and developers made changes and sent prototypes back and forth. Once a final version was approved, it was sent to the factory to be copied for mass production. From start to finish, the process could take as long as a year. Now, some companies have designers creating images on high-resolution computer tablets. They use software programs that can email 3D images of clothing with measurements immediately to factories. The goal is to reduce to 6 months or less the time it takes to get new products to stores. For clothing manufacturers and stores, this change means design decisions can happen closer to when new fashions arrive at stores. Currently, the 3D technology is only used in just 2% of overall suppliers, says Spencer Fung, CEO of Lee and Fung. But he believes that will change as stores realize that reducing design time and prototypes saves money. Lee and Fung advises more than 8,000 manufacturers, including Beta Brand, and 15,000 suppliers worldwide. You can create an entire collection of clothes before actually making one real product, noted Whitney Cathcart, CEO of the Cathcart Technologies. She said this reduces waste, it reduces lead times, it allows decision-making in real time, so the entire process becomes more efficient. Fung said he imagines a situation where a social media image with a famous person wearing a red dress gets 500,000 likes. A message goes to a clothing manufacturer that the dress is trending. Within hours, a digital version of a similar product is on the company's website. A factory can start to produce the dress in days. Nikki Rector lives in Northern California. Last year, she bought a pair of Beta Brand's boots based on the 3D image. "It looked real," said Rector. She did not worry about buying from a digital image, she said, because in online purchases, you cannot really know whether you bought the right product until you put it on your feet. Beta Brand has sold 40,000 pairs of shoes, priced from $128 to $168 over the past year, all from digital images. The company says it plans to add 15 to 20 more projects this year. Few companies are yet selling directly to buyers off digital images like Beta Brand. They are instead showing the images to store buyers or factories. Xcel Brands, which owns several clothing companies, uses them for their women's clothes, as well as for the Judith Ripka Jewelry Company. Xcel's chief, Robert DeLauren, hopes to start putting 3D images on its website next year. I'm Phil Dierking.
A severe lack of rain in the western part of the United States is threatening wild horses. The dry conditions have led several groups to use extreme methods to protect the animals. Volunteer groups in Arizona and Colorado are bringing thousands of liters of water and truckloads of food to hard-to-reach areas in their states. But the local water supplies, called springs, have run dry and plant life has disappeared. Volunteers say this is the first time they have ever had to bring water to these areas. Federal officials have begun efforts to quickly gather groups of horses in desert areas of Utah and Nevada. In May, more than 20 horses were found dead on the edge of a dried-up watering hole in northeastern Arizona. Simone Netherlands is the president of the Arizona-based Salt River Wild Horse Management Group. She told the Associated Press, "We've never seen it like this."
As spring turned to summer, an extreme lack of rain, or drought, turned from bad to worse, Netherlands said. Parts of Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico are under the most severe kind of drought. Government experts say extreme conditions also are present in areas from California to Missouri. Brian McInerney is a water researcher with the National Weather Service, the government agency responsible for studying and predicting the weather. He said parts of the Southwest region have witnessed some of the driest conditions on record. At the same time, there are high temperatures and low levels of water from melting snow. The Federal Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, controls large areas of public land, mostly in the West. Agency experts say the problem facing wild horses is a result of their large population. The region is home to about 67,000 wild horses. The droughts have worsened the effect the horses have on their environment. Jason Lutterman is a BLM representative. He says there will likely always be problems with drought because it is common in the dry environment of the western U.S. What really exacerbates things is when we're already overpopulation, because then you already have resource issues, he noted.
The agency's emergency efforts to collect wild horses in western Utah began in the middle of July. They aim to remove about 250 wild horses from a population of almost 670. The operation is expected to take several weeks. Once the horses are gathered, the government gives them medical treatment and offers them for sale or adoption. Those that are not sold or adopted are sent to private organizations that can care for the horses for a long time. A similar emergency collection began this month in central Nevada. Officials said some horses in a group of 2,100 could die from lack of water in coming weeks. Volunteers are also taking action. Since late spring, Simone Netherlands' Salt River Group has brought hay to many places near Phoenix, Arizona, to feed starving horses. About 320 kilometers to the north, people near Gray Mountain, in the Navajo Nation, have started an effort to leave water and food for horses. The people say the horses would die without human assistance. Cindy Wright helped establish the Colorado environmental activist group Wild Horse Warriors for Sandwash Basin. In western Colorado, her group of volunteers say they are preparing to bring up to 18,900 liters of water a day to a group of 750 horses. Springs are drying up that have never dried up, Wright said. If we don't have a very good fall with a lot of rain, and it's also warm so that our fall vegetation grows, we're going to lose horses. Aletha Dove helped Wright establish her group. Dove notes that areas of the Sandwash Basin are low on food for wild horses. Dove said this is because the land is used to feed farm animals. So the group is bringing the water to other areas that have a lot of grass.
Activists supporting wild horses have criticized the Bureau of Land Management's suggestions that wild horse populations are too big. Critics say the agency is using dry conditions as an excuse to reduce horse populations because of pressure from farmers. The farmers' animals compete with the horses for the land and food. I do have a concern about the larger numbers that they're pulling off, and then a bigger concern about the BLM under this administration using all kinds of excuses to pull off horses, said Suzanne Roy. She is the executive director of the American Wild Horse Campaign, an activist organization. The agency is currently not permitted to kill wild horses it gathers. But the administration of President Donald Trump has proposed permitting the animals to be killed or sold for their meat. Activists in Nevada held a demonstration earlier in July at the BLM's office in Reno. They were protesting a horse collection planned for later this year. Activists want the government to use birth control to control wild horse populations. However, the horses must receive the fertility treatment yearly. And the treatment must be fired from a special gun at close distance. The Bureau says it is too difficult for use. BLM officials say the only exception is in cases where groups are easy to approach and the horses have markings, making them distinguishable from one another. But volunteers warn their efforts cannot go on forever. They say bringing in water and food could cost several thousand dollars each month and make horses dependent on humans. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look at the presidential election campaign of 1952. President Harry Truman decided not to seek re-election. The continuing war in Korea and economic problems at home had cost him the support of many Americans. His Democratic Party needed a new candidate for president. In the spring of 1952, Harry Truman offered his support to Adlai Stevenson. Stevenson, however, said he was not interested in any job except the one he had as governor of Illinois. Someone asked what he would do if the Democratic Party chose him anyway as its presidential candidate. Stevenson jokingly answered that he would have to shoot himself. So President Truman and other party leaders discussed different candidates. Each one, however, seemed to have some political weakness. The Republican Party was also discussing possible candidates. It was much easier for the Republicans to choose. Earlier, General Dwight Eisenhower had said he would be interested in running for president. Eisenhower was the highly respected commander of Allied forces in Europe during World War II. Many members of both parties supported Ike, as he was popularly known. Eisenhower agreed to campaign as a Republican. His closest competitor for the Republican nomination was Robert Taft. Taft was a senator from Ohio and the son of a former president, William Howard Taft. Senator Taft had strong support among Republicans for his conservative positions. But he did not receive enough votes at the party's national convention to defeat Eisenhower for the nomination. In his acceptance speech, Eisenhower told the delegates,
"Ladies and gentlemen, you have summoned me on behalf of millions of your fellow Americans to lead a great crusade for freedom in America and freedom in the world. I know something of the solemn responsibility of leading a crusade. I take up this task, therefore, in a spirit of deep obligation, mindful of its burdens and of its decisive importance. I accept your summons. I will lead this crusade."
Eisenhower chose Senator Richard Nixon of California as his running mate for vice president. Nixon was known for strongly opposing communism.
"I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States."
Earlier, as a member of the House of Representatives, Richard Nixon had led the investigation of a former State Department official, Alger Hiss. Hiss was accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusation and was never charged with spying. But he was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury and was sentenced to prison. Democrats opened their presidential nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois, 10 days after the Republicans closed theirs in the same city. Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson welcomed the delegates, but still seemed like he did not want to run for president. That only made the delegates want him even more. They were unable to choose a nominee on the first two votes. Then, on the third vote, a majority of the delegates chose Adlai Stevenson, and he accepted. He urged Democrats to campaign with honor.
Let's talk sense to the American people. Let's tell them the truth, that there are no gains without pains, that we are now on the eve of great decisions, not easy decisions, like resistance when you're attacked, but a long, patient, costly struggle which alone can assure triumph over the great enemies of man, war, poverty, and tyranny, and the assaults upon human dignity, which are the most grievous consequences of each.
A political observer described the differences between Adlai Stevenson and Dwight Eisenhower this way. Stevenson was a man of thought. Eisenhower was a man of action. The Republican Party hired an advertising agency to design a campaign to sell Eisenhower and Nixon to the American public.
The man from Abilene, out of the heartland of America, out of this small frame house in Abilene, Kansas, came a man, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Through the crucial hour of historic D-Day, he brought us to the triumphant peace of VE Day. Now another crucial hour in our history. The big question.
General, if war comes, is this country really ready?
It is not. We haven't enough tanks for the fighting in Korea. It is time for a change.
The nation, haunted by the stalemate in Korea, looks to Eisenhower. Eisenhower knows how to deal with the Russians. He has met Europe's leaders. Has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower.
Adlai Stevenson was known as an intellectual, an egghead. He dismissed some traditional political advisors and replaced them with fellow eggheads when he launched his campaign. The biggest issue in the 1952 campaign was communism. Stevenson said America needed to guard against it. Yet, he repeatedly criticized the actions of Senator Joseph McCarthy. For years, the senator from Wisconsin had been denouncing government officials and others as communists. Eisenhower did not criticize McCarthy, even when the senator accused Eisenhower's good friend and fellow World War II hero, General George Marshall, of being a traitor. The Republican campaign went smoothly until Nixon faced a campaign finance dispute. The vice presidential candidate was under pressure to withdraw. That led to Nixon's famous Checkers speech. He made the speech on national television on September 23, 1952. In it, he denied any wrongdoing. He defended his actions regarding the disputed funds and his decision to keep a special gift from a political supporter.
One other thing I probably should tell you, because if I don't, they'll probably be saying this about me too. We did get something, a gift, after the election. A man down in Texas heard Pat in the radio mention the fact that our two youngsters would like to have a dog. And believe it or not, The day before we left on this campaign trip, we got a message from the Union Station in Baltimore saying they had a package for us. We went down to get it. You know what it was? It was a little Cocker Spaniel dog in a crate that he'd sent all the way from Texas. Black and white, spotted. And our little girl, Tricia, the six-year-old, named it Checkers. And you know, the kids, like all kids, love the dog. And I just want to say this right now, that regardless of what they say about it, we're going to keep it.
The speech was a major success. Many Republicans voiced support for Nixon to stay on as Eisenhower's running mate. And Eisenhower agreed. A few weeks before the election, Eisenhower made a powerful speech. He talked about ending the war in Korea.
Now, where will a new administration begin? It will begin with its president taking a firm, simple resolution. That resolution will be to forego the diversions of politics and to concentrate on the job of ending the Korean War until that job is honorably done. That job requires a personal trip to Korea. Only in that way could I learn how best to serve the American people in the cause of peace. I shall go to Korea.
Adlai Stevenson also gave a powerful speech before the election. In it, he told of seeing an America where no man fears to think as he pleases or say what he thinks. An America where no man is another's master, where no man's mind is dark with fear. Adlai Stevenson spoke of a nation at peace with the world, an America as the horizon of human hopes. Americans voted in November. Eisenhower won almost 34 million votes. That was more than any other presidential candidate had ever received. Stevenson won about 27 million votes. Dwight Eisenhower was sworn in as America's 34th president in January of 1953. He was 62 years old. Many problems awaited the new Republican president. Republicans had only a small majority in Congress. Many of them were very conservative and unlikely to support many of Eisenhower's programs. The cost of living in America was rising. Senator Joseph McCarthy was still hunting communists, and the war was still being fought in Korea. But Ike had a lot of experience serving his country. Dwight Eisenhower came from a large family in Abilene, Kansas. They did not have much money. He received a free university education when he was appointed to attend the United States Military Academy at West Point in New York State. He remained in military service for many years. He was a top Army officer by the time the United States entered World War II in 1941. In June of 1944, he led the Allied D-Day invasion of Europe. In 1950, President Truman named him Supreme Commander of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. When Dwight Eisenhower ran for president, supporters shouted, "I like Ike." People liked him because he always seemed calm under pressure. As president, one of the first pressures he would have to deal with was the continuing war in Korea.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.